Hi guys, as a lot of you might know, I am one of the hosts of Swiftcast, the Taylor Swift podcast, and we're a show that's geared towards Taylor Swift fans and tries to not only keep fans up to date with Taylor's news, but also, like Taylor herself does, bring artists that we like in front of our audience and try and introduce our listeners to new music. And one of the really cool things we got to do recently was talk to Jim Adkins from Jimmy Eat World. Taylor just released an Apple Music commercial which featured the song The Middle by Jimmy Eat World, and we got to talk to him all about that, all about performing with Taylor in the past, and then beyond that, just about his musical influences and so many other great things. He really was so great to talk to. So I'm very excited to also be sharing this with the VRO, and I hope you enjoy the interview. Guys, welcome to a very special episode of Swiftcast. That clip you just heard was from 2011 when Taylor invited Jimmy Eat World to perform one of her favorite songs, The Middle, on the Speak Now tour. And one of the things that I think we all love about Taylor is how she stays loyal to the things and the people and artists she's a fan of. She always has. And now, 5 years later, she just debuted her latest Apple Music commercial where she rocks out to that same exact song. And we're very excited because joining us now is Jimmy Eat World lead singer Jim Atkins.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, Jim. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
I think we all just loved the commercial so much, and it reminded us of just how quickly 5 years had gone by since that performance, and thought it was so cool that Taylor has stayed a fan of you in that way.
Yeah, it was kind of a shock actually when it came in. We had heads up that it might happen, but I've learned not to really get too, not to start spending that imaginary lottery money like in advance, so to speak. It's kind of like, well, that'd be awesome. I'll believe it when it happens. And then all of a sudden it actually happened. It was kind of mind-blowing.
So, what was that like when you first found out it was going to happen? Was it Taylor that reached out, or did you just hear from Apple?
Yeah, well, our management company pitched it to us, said that there's been a request from Apple to use The Middle in a commercial, and we're all like, "Go on," and they're like, "Yeah, it's going to be like a vignette into someone's life about like using the software, and oh yeah, the person is going to be Taylor Swift." I was like,
Oh yeah.
"Okay, go on." Yeah, no, so I was like, okay, cool. I mean, what else? All right, cool. I mean, I don't know what else you do.
That's crazy. Well, did you have like a hand in the commercial at all? Like, were you able to like pitch any ideas with?
No, 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 no. I'm 99% sure that anything Taylor does is anything you see her do is kind of something that she has a plan built around, and is, I'm 99% positive that that came from her and her camp. The entire idea for everything.
That's pretty much about how we figured out too. Yeah.
Yeah.
We think Taylor pretty much has a 99% stake in most things she does.
It's kind of crazy. I'm sure you guys have probably covered it in earlier podcasts, but in 2011, when she invited me to come play, like her dad took me around and showed me the operation. It was just insane.
Oh, that's cool. Scott took you around to give you a little personal tour.
He's like super proud, just like, hey, check this out. And then we did this, and then we have this, and yeah, we're our own bus company, and we have Metallica's road crew with us, and it
Nice.
was like, oh wow, you guys are not messing around, not one bit.
Well, what was that call like back in 2011? Was that personally from Taylor?
No, it was like she kind of reached out to, she had her people reach out to my people and then pitch it to me, and then it was like, okay. I mean, come on, yeah.
Well, I know she's been a fan of you since she was a teenager. Even when she was like 17, 18, you guys were on her music video playlist that she would talk about, and it was a long time coming, I think.
Right. Yeah. No, it's unexpected. I mean, I knew that she was a fan, but I didn't expect her to ask me to come, sit in with her, which was rad.
And was the experience what you expected coming out onto her arena crowd stage?
Yeah, it was I don't know. We don't do enough of like the really crazy like arena type gigs to be ever really comfortable with that, and we certainly don't do gags like when we do play them, it's kind of like it's as a support slot, and we certainly don't do like the rising from the floor type of gags. So that was odd.
With smoke and lights and pyrotechnics.
Yeah, that was different for sure. But I mean, it was fun. It was certainly a wild ride.
And I know that ever since the Apple commercial came out, the middle has climbed the charts back again. Did you have that same experience in 2011 too, where you sort of were able to reach a new audience through Taylor?
I don't know if that, no, I don't think so. I mean, like locally, I instantly had cred with like all the kids on my neighborhood, though.
Oh
That
man,
Mr. Adkins is cool, it was like, yeah. Before that, it was kind of like, oh yeah, he plays in a band, Now it's like, oh, Mr. Adkins is cool.
that can't be true at all. No way.
So there was that, but I mean, I don't know. The newest thing is definitely kind of a more insane reach than sitting in with her.
I think within 24 hours, the song was up well into the 50s on iTunes.
I don't know if I'm able to access the actual data of what kind of, what hard numbers like that kind of tr just that exposure alone translated into, but I know it took a all of a sudden it was on Hot Tracks, which I guess has to be mean that your track is hot. And I mean, the record is 16 years old, so it's kind of not, it wasn't so hot like the day before. You can point a finger and say, oh, that happened. Yes.
Well, for someone like myself, I love the song, because I was very young, when it came out, but I loved the song my entire life. To get to hear it again in a different medium, in this commercial, I don't know, it's really refreshing. It was awesome to hear it again, and it was almost like not really nostalgic, I guess, but it was great to revisit, let me put it that way.
It's really flattering. It's kind of an overwhelming thing to take in that this after this long that people would still find something that we do, that speaks to them and still relatable. And this is the most flattering thing ever, I think, for a musician.
And what did you think about the final product, the actual commercial that was released?
It was a trip, man. It
Yeah,
was like, what's happening here?
right.
What is happening? What is this?
Yeah, I was pretty taken by surprise because, she released the first one, which was her treadmill, falling off the treadmill, which went pretty viral. And then we didn't know if there were going to be more, if it was just one. And a couple weeks went by, and it was early in the morning, I remember, and I was like half asleep, and I see this tweet from Taylor, and I was like, wait, what? And I saw it and I was like, oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's super cool. Yeah, we're all like, you know, we're all pretty like kind of, I don't know. It's an odd sensation for sure. Cause you know, she's like arguably the biggest pop star in the world, you know, like that's a pretty solid argument to make. And it's like, she's, you know, waving our flag pretty high. It's a surreal kind of experience.
Well, for me, it was really cool because I've been a fan of you since I was a teen, and not just with the radio singles, but really diving into a lot of your albums. And I was also an avid watcher of One Tree Hill.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you guys were so well integrated into that show. So I was sort of wondering what that experience was like and how that boosted your popularity over the years.
You know, that was really cool. I don't know. It just like, that was another kind of surreal experience. I think like being in a TV show is just not kind of, it doesn't fit in with myself, but my like overall perception of myself as being like dude in a TV show.
Yeah.
and then I'd be like having our music there and being kind of like a big part of that. That episode, like it was just all pretty wild, you know.
And not only that episode, but they played your songs in multiple seasons throughout the show, and even named some of the episodes after your songs. So they really,
yeah,
made you guys a big part of the show.
Yeah, no, I mean that was, again, it's a really flattering. I don't know how else to take it other than it's just like a crazy, flattering, surreal experience, you know? Because like on our side of the thing of music, it's like, you know, we have our process of what we'd like to hear and how we like to challenge ourselves in making music and writing music and recording. And that's kind of our world. And then we know how to take that and perform it and, you know, play it for people and travel around and do that. And that's our world too. And opportunities that come up that we say yes to that are outside of our world are always like a really, you grow from them for sure, but it's scary at the same time. So like opportunities like coming to play on, you know, and be filmed that's going to be in a, you know, an episode of One Tree Hill is like one of those kind of scary growth moments that you just kind of barrel through and try to enjoy it, but it's also like pretty frightening.
And so would you describe yourself, just for people who might not be as familiar with some of your other stuff, in a particular genre or style?
You know, for people that had never heard our band before, I would describe us as a guitar-based melodic rock band.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
That'd be the most general way to, you know, like at a family reunion, like an aunt who's like, oh, that's great, you play in a band, what do you sound like?
Oh, no.
That's what I would say. We're a guitar-based melodic rock band.
And so right now you're kind of in a transitional phase between albums. What's a typical day like for you, and are you still writing?
You never clock out of this gig.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. That's cool.
You never clock out of this gig. Yeah, there's always something that you can be doing. Always, you know, I think, I mean, and what we, you know, with our group, it's kind of no exception. I mean, we have our own space here in Arizona that we have as a rehearsal studio. We've actually made records there before. So it's kind of, I guess it's more than a rehearsal studio, but you know, we're working all the time, whether it's like jamming out ideas or writing songs or recording. It's kind of all one big nebulous thing. And then sometimes we put out an album.
So you guys have had such a long, successful career. And I wanted to know, when you're working on songs like Sweetness, The Middle, or Hear You Me, some of those songs that got really big, what was the process like for creating those songs? And did you have a sense that they would become such hits that they were?
No, I don't think you, I guess kind of like to tie it in with where I was trying to ramble and take land the plane earlier is that, you know, outside of our world, like we really don't know what's going to happen to any of this stuff. I think the best way to approach it is just to try to be honest with what you like to hear and what you're trying to, what the goals are for your song. And anything beyond that is really just, it's not up to you. But I think if you can get that initial point of, feeling like I guess that reward from pushing yourself and creating something in an honest way that like you know, then you feel like you can win. You know, it doesn't really matter what the reaction is or what the take is from anybody else, because like you know that you've done something that you wanted to do. So with Sweetness or Hear You Me or any song from any album, that's the criteria on what we base a successful finished song out of. It's like whether or not we're feeling excited about it, whether or not we feel like we've created the best type, the best song for what we feel the song wants to be.
Awesome. Very cool.
And how would you say that your voice, or maybe I guess the way you write songs, has changed over the years? Or has it changed?
I don't know. I mean, there's definitely things that happen, like, just as you get older.
Life happens.
Life kind of happens. There's that. You know, and also it's like I think when you're younger, you just kind of blurt out whatever happens. And it's sometimes like sometimes it's a visceral revelation that you just sort of capture. And I think like the more often you get a chance to write, and you multiply that with just getting older and having more life experience, I think you kind of look at it from different ways, and you sort of approach it in different ways. Because there's no rules to any of this, you know. Mm-hmm. Like,
absolutely, you can, right?
You know, which is sort of like it's liberating, but it's also terrifying. Mm-hmm. So you know, I mean, I think like over time, like I've tried to write. You know, wherever you look, you're always going to find yourself. Mm-hmm. But so the trick is, I think, to find new ways, new places to look.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the difficulties of songwriting, I mean, was there any particular song that you thought was maybe the hardest to write or took the longest or, you know, anything like that?
I don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. songs come together in any number of ways. You know, I think like it could be 2 hours mm-hmm. and you're done. All lyrics, full arrangement, everything about it, it's just done. And then there's other songs it's like pulling teeth for years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so interesting to hear that. I don't know. And not that we hear that often, but, you know, when you hear these things, it just makes you wonder, you know, I think that's what people are most fascinated about when they ask people about their songwriting process. Just like what goes on in a songwriter's head almost. Like it's just interesting to me. I don't know.
Yeah, because you're sort of chasing this nebulous thing, you know, like mm-hmm. On one hand, there's something you want to get at, but on the other hand, you're by confining it, you're also limiting what you can come up with. And by that I mean, you might be shooting for a specific thing that you want to say, but while you're chasing that specific thing, you get new ideas.
Oh, something else entirely.
Yeah, that send you off another path entirely. I mean, that happens all the time. So. Does that make it a less successful venture? No. You know, I mean, so like there's all sorts of like crazy twists and turns you might run into when you're really in there and asking yourself questions.
And I was kind of wondering, because you recently did a string of solo shows, how that's different for you versus playing with the band, and if you had any plans to do more solo shows in the future.
Yeah, you know, it was very different from the band, because it's like when we work with the band, like songs originate in any number of different ways, and there's no rules to that. Sometimes I come up with something, sometimes it just begins with a riff, and you know, somebody else kind of contributes, and it just builds from there. But doing the solo series that I did, it was just, you know, I'm the beginning and the end of it. It was like all that, it's on me, you know. When you're playing with other people, like you're responding to things that you hear, and that informs your next like choice of what you play.
Yeah. And it's like a collaborative effort.
Right. And then when it's just you, you're responsible for generating and directing all of that, you know, it's a completely different mindset. And it was fascinating to try, and I would definitely do more of it in the future. Just at the right time.
Do you have plans to announce any more tour dates anytime soon, or is it kind of more of a break for you guys?
We have a handful of things kind of in the works right now. We're gonna play in Temecula on May 21st at some crazy festival thing.
Yeah, I saw that. That looks really awesome.
It's one of the weirder gigs I think we've been pitched, like a hot air balloon festival, but
Why
why not? We've done everything else, you know, why
not?
not? And yeah, I don't really know what is going to be happening soon, but more music will definitely be part of it.
And do you have any, I guess, dream collaborations or people that, you've always wanted to work with or that you want to write with in the future?
Man. You know, I've done some collaborative type like writing sessions, and I don't do a lot of it, but what I have done, it's really fun, and it's fascinating when you get to intimate knowledge of what someone else's process is like, because everyone comes at this in a different way, and I'm just fascinated by the process of it. No, I don't know. I'd jam out with just about anybody.
If you could put together like your dream tour lineup, who would be on tour with you?
There we go.
Oh man.
I'm always so fascinated by people's answers because it always surprises me.
Let's see. I think it'd be fun to tour with the Killers.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh, that would be cool.
Oh, they're awesome.
Think that'd be a good match. I don't know what they're doing. Here's my shameless pitch to the Killers to go on tour.
Yeah, we'll go make it happen.
Dudes, let's do this.
We'll tweet them when the interview comes out.
Right. No, I don't know. I mean, it's yeah. I don't know.
Well, on another note, let's say hypothetically one day you and Taylor sat down in a writing session together. What kind of song do you guys think you could come up with?
Oh man. That would be I would love to try writing with her. I think that'd be fascinating. I don't even know, man. Like, I guess that sort of depends on a lot of different things of what it would sound like or what it would be.
Well, we kind of have a theory that just based on stuff she said and done recently, that her next album might have sort of a rock sound to it. And so I think we're very intrigued and excited to see how that goes.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, I guess if I was going to work on something with her, I'd definitely want to try to push her more into like a rock zone and see just kind of like, I would definitely want to push her into a place that she thinks is like too much, and then just to see what too much kind of sounds like, and get and really just feel what too much feels like, and then she could decide if she wanted to walk that back at all or go for it.
That makes sense. Now I know that for a while you guys did a cover of We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together in your set list, which was really cool. And I wondered if you happened to see any videos or anything of the rock version that she did on the 1989 tour.
No, I didn't.
I think you'd really like it. You should check it out.
Oh man, yeah, it was great.
She rocked it up.
Yeah, she had electric guitar and like a whole like crazy backdrop, and it was the rockiest performance she's ever done, and I think we all loved it.
Oh man, I gotta check it out. I had no idea.
On Apple Music, another plug for them. You can watch the
Yeah.
whole tour on there. And if you guys haven't heard that cover of We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, here's a clip of it.
This time, I'm telling you, we are never, ever, ever getting back together. We are never, ever, ever getting back together. You go talk to your friends, talk. My friends talk to me. We are never, ever, ever, ever.
But yeah, we're
Huh.
very intrigued, and I think that, she navigates between genres so well that I'm really excited to see who she writes with and produces with, because she's always pushing the envelope like that. So I think she'd be very open to what you said, and I hope you guys get to work together sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. I hope that happened too.
I mean, like, twist my arm.
I think the world is ready for Rock Taylor.
Yeah.
We gotta get you to lead her into a gym.
And then you, Taylor, and the Killers can all form a tour together.
Oh, nice.
That would be great.
Trifecta, right.
Yeah, that'd be insane.
So, you know, obviously this is a fan-based podcast. Everyone who listens is a big fan of Taylor. We love to hear fan stories. What is possibly the greatest or the craziest thing one of your fans has ever done for you? What would that be?
Oh, man. Gosh. Let's see. I think our world's most dedicated fan is a woman who lives in Japan, and she just kind of shows up at gigs all over the world.
Wow.
Cool.
Wow.
No kidding. What, like front row? You just see her like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Like, we're, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm doing, yeah, it's kind of mind blowing.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever gotten to meet her?
Oh yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, she's not crazy.
Oh, that's good. Okay, good.
I know what you're thinking. She's not crazy.
Just very dedicated.
We always hope that the artists that we love don't think we're crazy for going to as many shows as we do, because
right.
I think that's like the ultimate compliment, really, is when fans feel that much of a connection to the music that they want to experience it as much as possible and they're willing to travel to do it. I think that's when you know that your music is actually reaching people.
Yeah, no, I think like any musician who really loves what they're doing, I think understands exactly what it feels like to be fanatical about music. I mean, if you don't, then you should just stop.
Yeah.
Because, and I think like while it's sort of odd that I think, you know, like every musician is really just the coolest musician you can possibly think of is a nerd. Is like deep down inside a shy, low self-opinion, like, you know, nerd. That's all of us for sure, you know. And I think like it's just a really odd thing to think of, you know, that someone else with that the fanaticism toward music that you have, that someone else would feel that about what you're doing. Like, it's just kind of it sort of causes a disconnect in I think your low self-worth nerd's perception that somebody else would really be into what you're doing. So I think, like, you know, I'm getting better at that sort of thing in my advanced age of, you know, being able to accept compliments. But I think for a lot of us, it's an odd thing that is kind of a disbelief moment, really.
So, Jim, we have some rapid fire questions for you. What do you think? Are you down for that?
Bring it.
All right. Excellent.
Was that the first one?
That was the first question.
Yeah. Was that the first question? Yes. Yeah. Just like one or two words, you know, a quick answer. Nothing. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. So.
Okay.
All right. Ready?
Yes.
Number one, favorite ice cream flavor?
Chocolate chip cookie dough.
Nice. Oh, mine too. Excellent. Okay. Favorite song or band?
That's really hard. I just gotta be quick about it, right? I can't overthink it.
You can overthink it a little.
First thing that comes to mind.
Favorite song, I would say, maybe Give Me a Sweetheart, Everly Brothers.
Oh, cool. Greatest high school moment?
Graduating.
Nice. Dogs or cats?
Probably cats.
What was the first concert that you have ever attended?
Paul Simon.
Oh, what? Cool. Oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
My dad took me to see Paul Simon play solo acoustic, like, I think it was before Graceland came out. And this isn't exactly rapid fire, but...
That's okay. This one's really cool.
He really wanted to go, and he had two tickets. I don't think my mom wanted to go, so he took me. I was probably like 7 or 8.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah.
Favorite superhero?
The Tick.
Your greatest fear?
My greatest Fear. Oh, man. Pickles.
Mine too.
Yep, Ashley too.
That is so funny you say that.
We would be best friends. I hate them so much. They're the worst.
I hate pickles. I hate pickles.
I love that.
If you could be any animal, which animal would you choose?
I'd be some, I don't know. I'd be definitely something that can fly.
Yeah.
Just cruise around, flying. Being stoked because I'm flying.
Name one guilty pleasure that you have.
Chocolate chip cookie dough.
Nice, yep.
Guilty.
Of any artist in history, who would you choose to collaborate with? You can choose anybody.
Oh, man. That's really hard. I think, oh, man. I don't know. I think it'd be totally different and totally out there, but I think maybe like Bjork would be somebody that'd be
cool.
You know?
Very cool.
I'd pick someone I'd try to learn from, you know, like what are they about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Name one hidden talent that you have that nobody knows about.
I can juggle.
Oh, cool.
Ah, that's cool.
Nothing complex, not like chainsaws and stuff, but, you know.
What is your favorite movie?
Oh, these are actually really hard. These aren't rapid-fire questions. These are tough.
No.
These are questions that you think would be easy, and then when you're asked, your mind draws a blank.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like if you said name a movie, then I'd probably name my favorite movie. I don't know. Starship Troopers.
Oh, cool. If you were a teacher, what subject would you teach?
I'm kind of only qualified to talk about music, so maybe, I don't know.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of musical thing. Some musical thing. Sign up for musical thing.
I like that. Yeah, right.
What would your career be if you weren't a musician?
I was on the road to doing journalism, actually, before this whole thing veered off. So I'd probably be in journalism.
Very cool.
All right, last one. This one's a big one. You have to answer this correctly.
Correctly.
If Taylor asked you to name her third cat, what would you name it?
Rufus.
Nice. Rufus. Okay.
Rufus. I like that.
It sounds sort of like a regal cat name.
It is. That's what she likes, so.
I think Rufus would get along with Meredith and Olivia. At least name-wise. They probably would hate each other, but... Jim, thank you so much. Is there anything that you want to plug for our listeners or let people know where they can find you?
I'm on the internet somewhere. You can cruise around. I'll be there. I'll be hanging. No, just thanks a lot. It's really nice talking to you guys.
Thanks so much. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So that was a great interview that we had from Jim. Thank you so much for doing that, Jim. You were very generous with your time. We very much love that.
That was the most fun I think I've ever had doing an interview with someone.
You know, I'd have to agree. I mean, Jim, I mean, he's just a very easy guy to talk to. Everything just flowed really naturally. Really.
I think he should do a podcast of his own where he just tells his stories, because I feel like he has so much to share from such a long career that people would love to hear it.
Life of Jim.
And obviously, of course, we're going to make sure that they get on that tour with the Killers.
Absolutely.
And he and Taylor get into the studio working on something immediately.
You know, a couple things in that interview that I thought were really fascinating. One, when he mentioned that he wants to work with an artist that is just someone he can learn from, I thought that was really cool. That was really noble. I thought there were a lot of quotes that he gave, like we can just quote him and then use that elsewhere. I mean, just a lot of great life advice that he had in that thing. To say that, you know, he wanted to work with someone just exclusively who he can learn from, I think that's really cool. As an individual, as an artist, you know, whoever, everybody should aspire to, you know, surround themselves with people who they can learn from. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I think Taylor has the same philosophy. Especially when she decided to start collaborating with people, she said it was because she wanted to learn from other techniques.
Yeah, and he's been around the music industry for 23 years, so he obviously has tons and tons of knowledge. But like Nate said, it's still cool that even at this point in his career, he still wants to learn more. He still wants to do more. And I think in his upcoming music, he'll certainly do that.
And you know, I think that's sort of what I was trying to get at when I was asking how their songwriting and their voice has changed over 8 years. And what I really meant by that is you can tell when an artist is really putting in the work to consistently put out great music. Like, I've listened to all of their albums since they started, and it never gets stale. It never feels like they're just doing the same song over and over. They have so many interesting messages to share and different musical styles of some of their songs, and I think that putting in that work and learning and always trying to learn, like he said, is what really gives an artist the ability to last for as long as they have and hopefully well beyond that.
Yeah, I did have the chance to see Jimmy Eat World in concert one time, and it was way back 11 years ago in 2005. They were opening for Green Day on Green Day's American Idiot tour. And it being 11 years ago, I don't have a great memory of it, but like all of us, I knew of The Middle and Sweetness. And I remember that as an opener, they were really great because sometimes, you go to concerts to see the main act. And the openers don't always live up to expectations, but they certainly did. So I hope to get out and see them again sometime soon.
And I think we all have to take a moment to acknowledge the most profound and inspiring thing that Jim said in the interview, which was how much he's afraid of pickles.
Just like you.
Just like me. I thought I was the only one. It's nice to know you're not alone.
And for anybody who doesn't know Ashley personally, she has such a distaste for pickles.
Distaste is putting it lightly, honestly.
Like vile, deep-seated hatred for pickles.
It's a very deep-seated hatred. They can't be near me. They can't be at my table. I can't associate with them in any way.
Well, thanks again to Jim for doing this interview. This is great. We really appreciate you coming on the show. And if you guys want to find out anything about Jim, there are a few ways you can reach him. Of course, any type of social media. But his website is jimmyeatworld.com. And the band's Facebook page is facebook.com/jimmyeatworld. And their Twitter is twitter.com/jimmyeatworld. You can tweet them. You can Facebook message them. Tell them how much you enjoyed the episode. That would be awesome. Just a few reminders for you guys as far as our podcast goes. Please press the subscribe button on iTunes, and it will download the latest episode for you automatically each week. And if you would, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps other people find the show. And of course, we just love hearing from you. So if you guys do want to reach out to us directly, you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/swiftcast13. You can find us on Tumblr at swiftcast13.tumblr.com. Our Instagram is instagram.com/theswiftcast13. Our Facebook is facebook.com/theswiftcast. You can email us at theswiftcast13@gmail.com, or you can find all of these things on swiftcast13.com.
And we also wanted to let you guys know that we, I guess not that recently, but we haven't really plugged it, started a YouTube account where we've been posting audio, full episode audio of all of our episodes.
That's right.
And we don't have a direct channel set up yet, but if you go on YouTube and you type in Swiftcast, our episodes will come right up. And we would love it if you would subscribe to us because once we reach 100 subscribers, then we can actually go ahead and claim the channel that we want so we have an official Swiftcast channel. So that would be awesome. And finally, I wanted to give a shout out to someone who left us an iTunes review just a couple of days ago. We very much appreciate it. This person didn't put their name, so get in contact with us. If this was you, we'd love to say hi and get to know you. But their username is Expensive to Play, and on May 4th, they wrote on iTunes, "This is the best podcast I listen to. I love hearing about Taylor Swift from other people. Definitely subscribe. I'm always excited for every episode to come out." Thank you so much for saying that. That's really great to hear. We appreciate it. And like we said earlier, leaving us these reviews makes it easier for other people to find us on iTunes.
Oh, guys, for episode 154, this has been Nate.
Ashley.
Steph.
And Adam.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Thanks.
See ya. If you're listening, whoa.